Anything Combat with Johnny K.
But it's Anything Combat, though.
Anything Combat podcast. I'm Johnny K. To start off this episode, as we recap UFC 323, I just want everybody to know that if you have something in your life where somebody says something to you or takes you off your flow of your frequency and your vibration, that you just need to take some time out, recalibrate, and come back stronger with that positive energy. If you have your momentum and then they take you out of that momentum, they're doing that for whatever reason. Maybe they're angry with themselves, maybe they're angry with you, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But what result has occurred is that your momentum is now, there's been aberration in your momentum. What you need to do is you need to get back on the horse and to pretend like it didn't happen, but you need to accept that it happened and move on. It's not your fault. You can continue. All right, let's get into the fight breakdowns. First fight I want to talk about, Iwo Baranowski, or whatever his name is, versus Ibo Aslan. So Ibo, you know, he's throwing these crazy meaty hooks, big meaty hooks, and he's wild, you know, Turkish fighter fighting the Polish dude. They drop each other two times, have one of the craziest rounds in UFC history. I tweeted after the fight that was one of the craziest fights I've seen, like craziest rounds I've seen in a while. I think that Ibo needs to kind of recenter, re-game plan what he's doing in his fights, because what he usually does, he just marches forward, throws these crazy hooks, and then he gets caught or he, you know, takes the guy out. This time, he wasn't so lucky. You know what I mean? Your luck runs out when you fight like that. And Ibo, his luck ran out, and he was throwing these crazy hooks, and Baranowski sat him down. Ibo caught him, put him down. Baranowski came up and took him out. Baranowski, everyone was talking about Polish power. You know, Jan Blachowicz was on this card as well. I think about Baranowski, he's got a lot of potential in the division. If he keeps that measured punching game with his build, he's like a shark. He's kind of got a shark's build. I think that I want to see him up against kind of a grappler next, just to test his grappling. Undefeated, 7-0, light heavyweight. Baranowski just put out Ibo after a war where they both dropped each other multiple times in a singular round. And the fight only lasted a minute 29, which is fucking insane. Also, I've been informed that I should stop swearing during these podcasts. Moving up the card, I want to talk about Edson Barboza versus Jalen Turner. So Jalen's come back. He had the shortest retirement out of any other fighter. From a mental health point of view, I don't really think Jalen is completely healthy. And I mean that because the way he's acting, he's crying 1 minute, then he's left the UFC, he's retired, he's quit his dream, his career, now he's back, he's praising Jesus, and he's I just think it's very, he seems very out of control right now. And you know, great performance, he beat Edson's an older type of guy, but yeah, Jalen doesn't look like he's in a good space. He's very unpredictable. You know, people think I'm a little bit weird. The actions that Jalen's doing, a little bit strange. I'm not going to lie to you. It's just my opinion. Moving up the card, Nazim Sadikov versus Farazian. I said that Faraz was going to have a really good performance. Now, what's interesting is, you know, Nazim Sadikov is a very good fighter and has a lot of attributes. And, you know, before this fight, he was 11-1-1, and now he's just taken another loss. And I'm reading the statistics here, and Nazim only landed 7 total strikes, and Faraz landed 76, which is complete domination. What do I think about the stoppage? I think that the stoppage was justified because for us was smashing with elbows over the top and putting a lot of damage on him, and it was only going to lead to more damage and high possibility that Nazim, would get KO'd during that sequence. And for us looked really good. Nazim had a very bad performance. I still really like his style. I think he's got a lot of potential, but he just had a really, really bad performance. And, you know, these things happen. For us, on the other hand, looked really good and now puts him in the position where, as I said, he's going up in this division. He's a serious contender and very problematic for the division. I still want to see how he can contend with the grappling, but in terms of striking and fight IQ, Firas Ziyam has very underrated fight IQ, and I think that he kind of proved where he was supposed to be in the division, which is the top half of the division. I don't want to talk about the event in its entirety, because sometimes there's just matches that I'm just bored. I'm bored. I want to just break down what I want to break down, because doing the whole card is just, there's so many boring matches that I can't be stuffed really breaking down. Yeah, like, for example, like, what could I possibly say? You know, Terence McKinney versus Chris Duncan, you know, Terence just rushes in, Chris hits him with an elbow eventually and finishes him, you know, and like, we kind of knew that was going to happen. And then Grant Dawson versus Manuel Torres, he's going in there with someone who's very dangerous, and Grant Dawson's very chinny. You know, he's very chinny, and Manuel Torres hit him with a kind of, I don't even know if it was a big shot or not, but he took out Grant. So that's why I'm moving up to the rest of the card, because there's not much really to break down. Jan Blachowicz versus Bogdan Guskov. What did I think about this match? You know, Jan, he looked really good in the striking. In the third round, he looked very, very good. He looked like how I predicted that he was going to fight the whole match, but he didn't fight the whole match that way. He was kind of a little bit slower in the first. And then in the second, he got dropped. So the second was a write-off. So that first round, he kind of outstriked Bogdan, and it was a pretty easy, fairly easy round for Jan Blachowicz. The second round, Bogdan caught him with a really good shot, sat him down, and then proceeded to smash him on the floor, 10-8ing him in that round, and I believe that to be a 10-8 round. Third round, Jan Blachowicz started putting switch kicks, started doing punches, started mixing the game up and mixing. He was feinting a lot with the takedown so he could get the punches off. So Jan Blachowicz won that third round. So it was 10-9 for the first and third to Blachowicz, and it was a 10-8 in the second, making this fight a majority draw between the two. Now, Jan Blachowicz, this is his second draw, because he just had a draw up against Magomed Ankalaev. I was saying from the start that Bogdan Guskov is an overrated fighter, right? I like the camp that he's from. You know, Shara Bullitt's there, Volta Walker's there, and Bogdan's there. Now, I personally think that Bogdan is a little bit overrated. At the same time, if you really think about it, you know, Blachowicz is very good as a fighter, even if he's 42 years of age, and Bogdan's having a contentious fight with him. It means that Bogdan has some good potential, but he's getting up there in age. You know, Bogdan's 32. Bogdan still has a lot of room to improve his game against Blachowicz. Blachowicz just out-fight IQ'd him and looked really good doing it. In the grappling sequences, I really liked the ground and pound out of Bogdan. It was very effectual, whilst Jan was kind of doing ineffectual movements in his jiu-jitsu, going for fucking heel hooks and all the rest, which doesn't matter, doesn't lead to anything. Yan looked good out there. You know what? If they want to rebook this match, Bogdan Guskov versus Yan Blachowicz, I wouldn't even be surprised. And I think that's a really good idea because that way we can actually see who's the better fighter and put that over 5 rounds. Because I think Yan Blachowicz over 5 rounds can beat Bogdan better than it, you know. I think that he can beat him. I think it's more probable that he can beat him over 5 rounds than he could beat him over 3. What I did is I got myself a coffee just then because I don't know. I just fuck feel so flat right now. Fuck. The point I'm trying to make with Bogdan Guskov and Jan Blachowicz is that Jan is much more well-rounded as a fighter than Bogdan. If they would have a wrestling match, Jan would win that. If they had a jiu-jitsu match, Jan would win that. If they're having an MMA match, however, Bogdan can hit him with one shot, just one, and win the whole round by, you know, dazing him, going on top of him, and ground and pounding him, right? So the point I was making prior to the fight is that out of the two fighters, Jan has much more skill, and Bogdan cannot do what Jan Blachowicz can do in the cage. I want to see the rematch. If they do the rematch, do it over 5 rounds. Jan Blachowicz is probably going to take that. Henry Cejudo versus Peyton Talbot. I couldn't believe that they made this match because it's like an Easter egg. It's like a DLC. It's like a funny, fucking weird match, based on where they are in their careers. But I put all my stock into Payne Talbot. I said, this guy's going to be big. He goes out there and he shocks the world. He goes out there and he does some of the craziest things I've seen a fighter do. He hits the inside trip on Henry Cejudo, which is Henry's move. He hits Henry Cejudo's move on Henry Cejudo, taking down a gold medalist from the Olympics, and then he double-legged that gold medalist from the Olympics in freestyle wrestling. He did his signature move on him, and then he double-legged him as well. So Peyton, who's supposed to be the striking guy, is now wrestling with Henry. If Peyton can do this against Henry, there is nothing stopping this dude from going to the top of the division and fighting someone like a Sean O'Malley and winning that match. You know, Peyton's probably one of the toughest fighters I've ever seen in MMA in terms of his chin. He's durable, he's very intelligent, he's got very good punching. I was talking about how, because of the reach disadvantage that Henry had, that Peyton wanted to stay down on the one and twos and kind of clip him and push him down on the two on the cross. And when he got in there, I was watching it live, and he was throwing the jabs, and then he was clipping him on the cross downwards, just spinning his chin down. So every single thing that I thought about that Peyton, you know, should be doing, he did that, and that's of his own accord. And I was very impressed with the performance. I was so impressed that I think that he can go all the way at bantamweight. I think that he's going to be a tough fighter if he's adapting this fast. If he's adapting this fast and he's learning this quick, Peyton can get to the top of the division. And he's got attributes, and he's very, very strong and durable, and he's got very good fight IQ. So there's nothing stopping him from claiming that UFC championship. These matches, you know, Song Yadong, Sean O'Malley, Petr Yan, these for Peyton Talbot right now, depending on his age and his skill level, these are winnable matches for him. If he can take abuse like that, and he can dish out abuse like throwing flying knees at Henry's head, and out grappling him, and also out clinching him, out counter wrestling him, putting him up against the fence, and working the knees on him as well, straight to the stomach, and also out boxing him too, and the way he was switch dancing, and how he was fighting in Southpaw as well, that was wild. I was a little bit cautious at the start of the match when I saw that Henry was kicking his legs out, and I saw that he didn't have an answer for it, and then all of a sudden he adjusted, and within the end of the round, he had Henry seriously, seriously hurt. He put crazy damage on Cejudo. I've never seen somebody fight Cejudo like that. So, Payne Talbot, a serious threat in the bantamweight division. I don't even think Henry underperformed. I think Henry performed the best that he could have in the circumstances that he had, and he was in there with somebody who he was in there with a fighter that was just better than him. And the craziest part about all of this is that Peyton didn't even look like he was trying that hard. Henry was heavily breathing, he was panicked, he was anxious in there, and Peyton was laughing at him, enjoying it. So as a fighter, I think Payne's one of the most deadly people. He loves to fight. He loves it. Other people are nervous. He loves to fight. He loves the blood and the gore, and he's vicious. So these are all characteristics we look for in a fighter. And now he's put on top of that, that he's got the skills, he's got the grappling. Now he's got the grappling now after the Rayoni Barcelos fight, where, you know, he was taken down. And this is why I was talking about how, you know, he came back and he fought Felipe Lima, and all of a sudden now he's good at grappling. So I just don't understand how someone can, you know, someone that can develop that fast, if they can develop that fast and they're on that trajectory where that's how fast they're learning, and you lose to Rayoni Barcelos by grappling, you fight Felipe Lima, and then all of a sudden you jump to a flyweight, bantamweight, and Olympic champion, Triple C, and you take him down, and then you batter him with the worst beating that anyone's ever put on him in the UFC and MMA. Peyton Talbot, seriously legit fighter. I had my doubts about him, but I don't have any doubts anymore. Seriously legit fighter. If he goes to the top 15, he'll smash a lot of these guys. He's a much smarter fighter than all these other guys. What I want to see out of him, though, is I mentioned this before, I want to see a Thai clinch, and I want to see jiu-jitsu out of him. I want to see submission threats. If he can do that, he has every aspect of MMA, and he'll be a terrible matchup for anyone, including Piotr Jan, and I really mean that, because someone like Piotr, who fought on this card, he's got the shorter range boxing, where Payton's got a longer reach and a different style of boxing, where he wouldn't box with him per se. He would throw a massive shot and then mix the game up. So in terms of MMA, he needs to round out his game a little bit more and mix up the game. But the way he's flowing in there, his flow is up there with the best in the division by far. But I think he just needs to mix up the game a little bit more. And now that he's mixing in takedowns, I want to see even more takedowns out of Peyton Talbot. So yeah, very, very impressive fight. And Peyton Talbot is now definitely a problem for anyone in their bantamweight division. The final thing I want to say is Peyton Talbot, the strike differential and selection was really good. He changed a lot of the striking. If you would go southpaw, he would throw a lead hook. If he was in orthodox, he would throw the knee straight down the middle, throw the kicks to the legs, kicks up tops. He would do the switch kick or the step kick from the lead side when he's in orthodox to the head. A lot of different selection. He threw a wheel kick, throwing flying knees, throwing elbows, punches. It's got a lot of tools. So Peyton Talbot, I'm looking forward to see what he does next. He can go very far, and if he dedicates himself to this sport, because I know he does skateboarding and does a whole bunch of other shit, I wouldn't be surprised if Peyton Talbot can get a UFC championship. Brandon Moreno versus Tatsuro Taira. So I said easy match for Brandon Moreno. Tatsuru's got nothing on him. Brandon's going to steamroll him. Did that happen? No, it did not happen. In the first round, when Brandon controlled Tatsuru, whatever happened, you know what I mean? If Tatsuru made a mistake, Brandon took him down, whatever happened, it doesn't matter. The first round where Brandon had him in a triangle, he kind of just held him there to as a veteran to win the round. The reason he kept him there is because he knows that Tatsuru's jiu-jitsu game is probably number one at flyweight. In the division, I can't really state who would have better, like, pure jiu-jitsu skills in that division over Tatsuru. Maybe Pantoja, but his style is more like mauling you and then get the sub. I'm just talking about Tatsuru's just pure jiu-jitsu skills, probably got the best in the division. So Brandon was kind of gifted that first round, and he didn't want to let that up because he knows that if he tries to get into a jiu-jitsu kind of role with Tatsuru, that he's going to get submitted. So the second round starts, and Tatsuru manages to get Brandon on the ground and dominates him. Easy domination. Puts him on the ground, puts the hooks in, punches him out, and the ref calls it immediately. And it was not a fast stoppage. That's how the sport works, and that's what needed to be done in that situation. There was no escape for Brandon Moreno, and he knew that in that first round, he knew that he didn't want to go to the ground and get into those jiu-jitsu sequences. I think before the fight happened, I said that, you know, Brandon could probably out-wrestle him or something, or out-clinch him. Tatsuru's jiu-jitsu was just too good. Young up-and-comer Tatsuru Taira takes him down. Tatsuru looked like he had he had created a better game for himself in terms of MMA. Brandon gets put on the ground. Tatsuru just decimates him, schools him completely, and now Tatsuru is probably the number one contender for that flyweight division. I was personally surprised that Tatsuru was able to take down Brandon fairly easily and kind of take him out with the ground and pound immediately. This is the first person ever to finish Brandon Moreno also, which is pretty historic, because Brandon Moreno has been in so many title fights. And let's actually count how many title fights Brandon's been in. It says here that Brandon's been in 6 title fights within his UFC career. And in the UFC alone, he's had 19 fights. If he's had 19 fights and he's never been finished, and Tatsuru is the first person to take him out, Tatsuru, you know, a lot of people in the community were kind of saying how he was the dark horse in the division and he could win the title. Now, because of what happened in the co-main event, that was the featured fight at flyweight. The co-main event was for the flyweight championship of the world, where Pantoja fought Joshua Van. What happened with Joshua and Pantoja? Now, Tatsuru has a really good line to the title, because I was under the impression that if Pantoja was the title holder, that Tatsuru was not able to get the belt, because Pantoja would mitigate his jiu-jitsu and brawl with him and just be more of a dog in there compared to Tatsuru. Now, we got Joshua Van. Joshua Van's grappling has not been tested within the UFC. I think Tatsuru, you know, they're both very young guys, Tatsuru and Joshua. If that match takes place between the both of them, I think Tatsuru can beat Joshua. I think he can take him down how he did Brandon. He got rid of Brandon Moreno fairly easily. Pantoja, it took him 5 rounds. Joshua Van, if he were to fight Brandon Moreno, they would strike and, you know, it would probably go to round 3, round 4 or something, you know, or even to a decision in terms of the boxing in that match. Tatsuro just got rid of Brandon Moreno in the second round in 2 minutes and dominated him. The stats here say that Brandon landed 9 strikes, Tatsuro landed 45. That first round, if Tatsuro hadn't made a mistake and Brandon controlled him for 4 or 5 minutes in that triangle, you know, that was a dangerous position that Tatsuro couldn't do much in there. So Tatsuro had to take that whole round off. So he basically got penalized for a whole round, equivalently. He got penalized, basically, because Brandon controlled him for a whole round. And then the second round came in, Tatsuro just, you know, took him down fairly easily and beat him. So where does that leave us? That leaves us with the co-main event at flyweight and the featured fight at flyweight, kind of setting everything up. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, I said this last time, I wouldn't mind seeing Pantoja versus Moreno 4 and book in Joshua Van versus Tatsuro Taira. That's what I'm seeing right now. But anyways, there's other matches to be made at flyweight also. Tatsuro looked really good. I think Tatsuro looked, out of all the flyweights, he looked the best out of everyone. Tatsuro fighting for the title next. Very dangerous for Joshua Van. A very tough opponent and very deadly. And if he's fixing up his striking, Tatsuro's fixing up his striking, then you've got a world champion on your hands. Yep, and that leads us to Pantoja versus Joshua Van. So Joshua starts the match in the first 26 seconds. Pantoja throws the kick. Joshua pushes him. Pantoja lands on the floor, dislocates, breaks his arm. Joshua wins the title in 26 seconds off a freak accident injury. So people were asking me, you know, shouldn't Joshua be higher on the pound for pound rankings than Pantoja? In my opinion, no, because of the way that he beat him. But he beat him off a fluke, first of all. And second of all, he beat him, the impetus of Pantoja breaking his arm is that Joshua pushed him. That's how MMA works, right? He hit the head kick or whatever he did, and then Joshua moved and Pantoja fell, right? I've seen Pantoja in that position so many times, and every single time Pantoja has landed, you know, on his shoulder, on his elbow, right? This time Pantoja stuck his hand out, and Jack Jenkins did the exact same thing and broke his arm too. It's a very common injury in MMA, sticking your arm out. It happens to everybody. You can't even think about it. It's entrenched in your mind to stick your hand out. And most of the time when you stick your hand out, it's fine. Even though, you know, you might be falling from a high distance, he stuck his hand out, you just collapsed, broke his arm immediately. So is this a legitimate win for Joshua Van? He didn't submit him, he didn't KO him, he didn't take him to a decision. He kind of just had a freak accident. What do you do with these types of fights? Do you say, oh, it's a no contest? In my opinion, you know, I think making fights like this a no contest is beneficial for everybody, because, you know, Pantoja doesn't deserve to lose here. He's a reigning defending champion, and he didn't lose the match. He fell over and KO'd himself. He TKO'd himself. Joshua didn't go there and land shots to beat him either. He's just now being gifted the belt. So Joshua is now the second youngest UFC champion in the UFC's history. Where does Pantoja go from here? I think Pantoja deserves an immediate title shot. Never lost the title. Joshua needs to fight Tatsuro Taira. I think Taira will beat Joshua, and then Pantoja will fight Taira. And that's the real match. That's the real match. If you're a hardcore, if you know about MMA, you'd know that Tatsuro Taira versus Pantoja is the actual match. We don't want to see other matches in terms of skill level, and that's where it's at. Joshua does not have the skills that Tatsuro does. And I don't think Joshua has the skills that Pantoja does. And I picked Pantoja to beat Joshua based on that. So, you know, for Joshua, this is his moment. This is what, this is good for him. I think there's a situation here where Joshua will lose the title and he can regain the title because he is, he's only like 24, 25. So the likelihood in the next 5 years that Joshua loses and regains the title, that's a lot of time for him to regain it. But who is he regaining it from, and how's that going to go? So, in summation, Pantoja now is injured. He's out. Joshua Van, he's got the title. He's probably going to have to defend it against Tatsuro Taira. Very hard matchup for him. And then Pantoja will come back and fight whoever the champion is. I just smashed out another coffee. Final fight of the night. The main event was Morab Dvalishvili versus Pyotr Yan. Pyotr Yan is now the champion, beating Morab Dvalishvili, proving that the first fight was not a fluke, but there was a caveat on the fight, seeing that Pyotr had a problem with his shoulder. So he wasn't 100% healthy, so he couldn't defend the takedowns. And Morab landed, you know, in the first fight, he landed 47-something takedowns. And in this fight, Pyotr Yan defended 27. So let me get the statistics up for the first fight. Says here that Pyotr got 11 out of 49 takedowns in the first fight. And in the second fight, he only got 2 of 29, proving that Pyotr's defense was much better. And he was healthy, so he was able to actually compete. So out of Pyotr, what did I like? We'll start with that. I liked the punching. I liked the kickboxing and the Muay Thai kicks to the body and to the head. I liked the takedowns out of Pyotr Yan. He totally slammed Morab Dvalishvili on his head. The first round, Pyotr kind of took that round off like he does to analyze the data, to kind of analyze and compute what he was going to do. And then he dominated the rest of the fight. I personally thought that the fight was closer than what people thought. But Morab, every single time I was seeing him land these shots, he wasn't doing any damage to Pyotr, and the aim of the game is you need to win off damage. So the aim of the game is to win off damage, and that's something that Morab wasn't doing. Pyotr had a lot of tricks. He went to spin a couple times, but he didn't end up spinning. Where does this put Pyotr Yan in terms of the greatest bantamweights in the history of MMA? So Morab Dvalishvili had a really, really good possibility to get 4 belts in 1 year. And he failed in doing so, unfortunately. He had a 14-fight win streak going into this fight, I believe. And in terms of the bantamweight best fighters, there's Dominic Cruz, there's TJ Dillashaw, there's Morab, and now there's Pyotr Yan entering that list, seeing that Pyotr already has 3 UFC titles, and he's now one of 3 with Dominic and TJ and Pyotr to now have regained the championship. So I personally think that Morab's win over Pyotr is not as impressive as this Pyotr win over Morab. Morab's in his prime. He's improving. He's working on his MMA game. He's holistically growing his game. He fought Sean O'Malley, started adding submissions into his game, started doing a lot of new stuff. Pyotr fought the hardest version of Morab that anyone's ever had to fight, and he beat him fair and square. So Pyotr is looking on fire, very impressed with his performance, and now it sets up Pyotr for the next to defend the belt a second time. Morab's probably going to need some time off just to heal up from the damage he sustained. He didn't look like he got injured, it's just a lot of damage. Pyotr Yan, this is one of the most impressive wins that someone has gotten, ending a 14-fight win streak. And the way he did it too, very calculated and very poised and positioned. So I'm very impressed with Pyotr Yan. And, you know, TJ Dillashaw has 5 UFC titles. Morab has 4 UFC titles, and Dominic Cruz has 4 with the 3 WEC, and now Piotr Jan has 3. They're all jockeying for position in that division to prove who's the best fighter in the bantamweight division, the history of the MMA bantamweight division. I personally think that Piotr has so much potential for the next 3-4 years to go down as the best fighter in the division. I was under the impression that Merab was on his way, and if he had been Piotr, I would have considered Merab the best fighter in that division. Merab's ranking up there with the best bantamweights, and now Piotr has come in and solidified his name in that division, getting the belt a second time. I think Merab, you know, his striking didn't look the best in this match. He wasn't landing powerful shots, and he couldn't gas out Piotr Jan. Couldn't gas him out. There are a lot of matches here for Piotr Jan to fight. I would like to see Piotr Jan versus Umar Nurmagomedov. I would like to see Song Yadong. I would like to see the rematch with Sean O'Malley. There's a lot of matches here for Piotr Jan within this division. If he takes on Song Yadong in a rematch, you know, Song's improved. He's fighting. He's training with Justin Flores for judo now, and Piotr beat Song Yadong in a really close fight in a 3-rounder. Now he can do it for 5 rounds. Umar Nurmagomedov is right there as well, and that's you know, Russia versus Russia. Two very different styles of Russians, you know. Piotr with the boxing and that type of game, and Umar Nurmagomedov with the Dagestani grappling. I think that's a really hard matchup for Piotr, and I think that the way Piotr has improved, completely rounded out his game. He's got a very versatile game right now. Him going up against Sean O'Malley in the rematch when the first fight that took place on the Makhachev Charles Oliveira card, the first matchup that they had was very close, and a lot of people thought that Piotr was robbed. I personally thought Sean O'Malley won that. But if you're talking about slow starters, Piotr is a 5-round fighter. He's not a 3-round fighter. I think Piotr Jan has made ridiculous improvements since the, you know, the Court McGee fight and the, I think that's his name, Marcus McGee, and he also took on Davison Figueiredo. So Piotr Jan's completely improved. I think that if he's going to fight Sean O'Malley another time, he will beat Sean in a 5-rounder, probably winning those 4th and 5th rounds where he finally gets his groove and gets going. Piotr looked like a fucking computer against Merab Dvalishvili, picking him up and just dumping him on his fucking head. Merab Dvalishvili versus Piotr Jan 3 is potential as well. Yeah, and Piotr, you know, at a Tiger Muay Thai and all the work that he's doing there, he's made this holistic game where he can wrestle. He's got decent jiu-jitsu, but we haven't really seen him go for submission attempts. He's a world-class boxer, one of the best boxers we've ever seen. He's got that long guard. He's got that Thai guard. He can do a Muay Thai clinch. His elbow and knee game is phenomenal. I wanted to see more out of his elbow clinch game against Merab. I think it's very effective because Merab keeps on grabbing him. And I know that if he throws a knee, you know, he could get taken down. So I just think he should stick to the elbows and just keep on trying to slice him up. Every single time Piotr got going, Merab tried to shoot more takedowns. You know, that trilogy fight against Merab and Piotr, I think the way that they fight and how they game plan and all the rest, I think the longer that you're in there with, this is a sign of the best fighters I've seen. The longer you're in there with the guys that are high level, the more data they collect on you, and the worse that you perform and the better that they perform. John Jones is an example. Islam Makhachev is an example of this. I believe Piotr Jan's one of them too. Piotr Jan, if Merab gets in there with Piotr a third time, I think Piotr's going to level up and take bigger risks. If he takes bigger risks against Merab, I think that the third fight will not be close and that Piotr will dominate the early rounds as well, which it rarely does. But I think because he would have so much data on him, I think that this time he wouldn't take as measured of approach. He knows what he's dealing with. The whole purpose of him analyzing the data in the first two rounds is to read the opponent. And if Merab is, if he's already been in there with Merab now for 10 rounds, because he's had 2 5-round fights with him, I think that he's got enough data collected to really just maul him for the third fight. I pick Piotr in the trilogy. I pick Piotr in the rematch with Sean O'Malley of 5 rounds. I pick Piotr against Song Yadong, yet to be determined, so we can see what happens with Song Yadong versus Sean O'Malley. And I pick Piotr over Umar Nurmagomedov because I don't think Umar can punch and strike how Piotr does. And we've already seen that Merab was able to take down Umar and kind of gas him out. And if Piotr can fight that fight with Merab, I believe that he'll have the takedown defense and the damage and the strength to deal with Umar's chain wrestling. The thing that Umar has that Piotr will have to deal with is those taekwondo kicks and the karate kicks and the ones that whip over the guard to the chin. I think, Piotr and Umar, that's the best fight. That's the highest level fight that you can make in maybe the whole UFC, to be honest, right now. Out of all the fights that you can make in terms of high level MMA, I think Umar Nurmagomedov versus Piotr Jan is probably the highest level match that you could make in terms of MMA ability and comprehension of mixed martial arts and anything combat. Quotation. The fact is that, I've been saying this for a while, I see a lot of fighters' games and I say, how can they change? How can they improve? Piotr has improved his own game by adding that freestyle component to it. The shots that he's doing, very impressive. He was nailing Merab with some serious shots. Merab getting hurt to the body is something that I've seen multiple times now. He got hurt to the body when he fought Sean O'Malley in the first fight. In the 5th round, he got hurt to the body, I believe, in the rematch too, and then with Sean, and then now he's gotten hurt to the body with Piotr. I personally think that maybe he might have some sort of hernia from picking up concrete or hernia from picking up heavy people, because Merab's crazy and he does these crazy health. He doesn't really care about his health that much, so. Merab, I think he's hurt himself, and every single time he gets hit to the body, he has a lot of pain. Piotr threw a body shot. He punched him with a lead hook to the body after throwing an uppercut. The lead hook right behind it, and hurt him to the body there also. So I think Merab has a problem with the body. Getting back to Piotr, Corey Sandhagen's right there as well. They've already fought. Having a rematch with those two is a great match too. Yep, and in the bantamweight division, you got Ayman Zahabi and you got Peyton Talbot right now. They're the two up and coming guys. Ayman Zahabi, I don't really have too much stock in him. I don't believe that he can do that well against someone like Piotr. Peyton Talbot, on the other hand, I do see a lot of similarities and entry points into Piotr's game where Peyton can do well. So the divisions are wide open right now, and I'm excited to see what Piotr does to solidify him as the best fighter in that division's history. The final thing that I'll add is, I want to see Piotr Jan taking more risks in there. When he starts taking risks and throwing wheel kicks and jump kicks and spinning back kicks and all the crazy judo techniques that he goes for and all the crazy trips. And, when he fought Uriah Faber and he's doing half clinch, pulling the head down whilst kicking at the same time, I want to see more under that. The more risky Piotr Jan is, I think the better that he performs. So I want to see him take some more risks. can't wait to see these other matchups and how the division plays out, because Piotr has a serious chance here to kind of define his legacy. And I wouldn't mind seeing the
yep. And I can't wait to see what they do with the Tapology rankings, because right now they're saying that, you know, Merab Dvalishvili is the number 10 in terms of legacy, and Piotr Jan's number 36. So if 36 is beating number 10 fairly easily, I want to see an update in the rankings for Piotr. Anything Combat Podcast, become a combatant.
Become a combatant.